SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Top of hour two on this Wednesday, and Sid Fernando joins us. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. And here we are, only a week into the year, basically. And Sid, there's so much that's gone on already. We got some foals that are dropping. It didn't take long. And I saw, actually here in New York, I saw that Klimt got his first foal. And then, of course, the sale underway, $5 million for Abel Tasman. That got the marquee lit up. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. Great. What some early impressions from the sale? We'll touch on the eclipses too, but was that the right price for Abel Tasman? Although, you know, record number, but that feels appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, before the sale, I'd been talking to some people, and I thought $4.5 million seemed about right. At $5 million, she equaled the sale January sale record of Mackie from, you know, I guess about 20 years ago. You never know though with these types of mares, you know, if they could just break loose. Even though we thought around $4.5-5 million, when you take a look at a horse, say, like Take Charge Brandy, who was $6 million, you know, as an Eclipse Award winner comp. You take a look at some of these other big mares that have, you know, made higher. It's tough to really tell what they're going to bring, but I think she ended up bringing a pretty good price for what she was for the end users. I think they're going to be pretty happy. Kumar Stud, of course, paid $5 million for her. You know, think about it. They paid in the fall in recent years. They paid $6 million for Stellar Wind, for example.
That's right.
So you know, based on some comps, I think she was pretty well bought, if you can say that, for about, you know, that type of money. But everything is relative, and in that sense, I think she was pretty well bought.
What would be your gut feel? And of course, as it was discussed yesterday with Jess Martini, the Coolmore team, you know, said that they're going to consider multiple options and approaches with her, and you got the sense that they also talked about taking her, you know, across the ocean. They're going to consider everything. What among the Coolmore choices? What's the right matchup for her?
Well, it's tough to tell. I haven't really looked. I did take on the Edix app, just to plug that, there's a mare match thing there. So if you put her name in, it gives you the best mix for her. And I had done that, and I noticed that obviously she's a very good match pedigree-wise with Justify. But I had been actually speculating before the sale that from the way she looked, I thought best physical match, and I haven't looked at what the pedigree would be like, but the best physical match, in my opinion, based on the eye test, would be American Pharoah for a couple of reasons. This mare is pretty lanky mare. She's a real tall mare. They say she's 16'2". Perhaps, you know, she could even be bigger and taller than that. A lot of times people like don't want to go past 16'2" in terms of height and publicizing a horse or a mare. But she's got a shoulder and high withers, very similar to American Pharoah. And then if you were to try to think about what she would need, keep in mind she'd been a 65,000 RNA yearling, and you could kind of tell why looking at her. You know, she would have been a tall, angular filly with not a lot of substance as a yearling. Everybody who had a chance to buy her then passed. Now she's brought $5 million because she's got 6 grade 1 wins and an Eclipse Award. But the physical aspects to her remain, and that is that she stands over a lot of ground. She's a tall mare. She's got a rear end that could probably add, be supplemented. And like to like, American Pharoah with that shoulder and that withers, he'd add some more butt to her. He'd size her down a bit. He'd add more musculature to her. Of course, you know, it would be the same type of plain brown wrapper, but I think that physically she'd always struck me as a horse that would be perfect for American Pharoah. If you go to Justify, on the other hand, you're gonna size, well, you know, he's a horse that's listed at 16.3, but he could easily be 17 hands. If she's even a tad higher than 16.2, you're talking about a, you know, pretty big first foal, and you know, it may be a size thing there. So it's you know, it'll be interesting to see which way they go. But American Pharoah physically would be my pick, but I'd have to take a look at the pedigree and analyze it. Of course, you can't go wrong with Galileo. He seems to be able to do anything with any mare. But I guess those three would certainly be your top choices.
Sid, when you're working with clients and in looking at the big outfits, the big either commercial, or they don't even have to be commercial, they might be big and breed to race, but what you just touched on, mm-hmm. the animal husbandry side of this, and I always refer to the only experience I've got goes back to when I wrote Farm News in Central New mm-hmm. York, and I learned from the Eastern co-op people in terms of them selecting, you know, farms and the inseminators selecting bulls from the catalog to improve the breed, that every opportunity that dairy farmers had to improve their herd, that was the, you know, that was always the goal. You always were picking mates and you know, insemination partners that would, you know, give horses better, you know, better physical. How much of that goes into these decisions and, you know, the length of bone and, you know, trying to add height or breadth, whatever it might be, you know, matching, because you hit on this aspect to me, and I'm curious how much of it is, you know, just worrying about breeding a better horse than picking partners that are going to make for something either commercial or, I mean, how much of that figures into this decision-making?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of very good breeders will take into account the pedigree with the physical components to that pedigree. There's a phrase in breeding that's called a fish and fowl mating, which is essentially what that sounds like, which is either in pedigree or physique, breeding two horses that are so dissimilar that it's called a fish and fowl mating. essentially people are try to breed. They may like something in the pedigree. They may like the way the nick is and so forth. And then they'll try to find a lot of stuff that has similar components between the stallion and the mare to try to capitalize on some of the best parts while looking for other elements to add to what may be false or lacking in the other one. So I think most people try to do that rather than just willy-nilly breed or do a fish and fowl type of mating, which, you know, if that's pedigree-wise, could bring you something not predictable, and same thing physically. Could, you know, breeding a 15-hand mare to a 17-hand stallion or something like that, you know. And frequently you have to understand that even if you do breed two big horses to big horses, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get a bigger giant. Or likewise, if you breed two smaller horses to each other, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get a runt. If there are similarities and such, take the example of the mating that was responsible for Sadler's Wells. Sire was Northern Dancer, 15-2. The dam was Fairy Bridge, a very small mare, probably 15 hands. The result was Sadler's Wells, who's probably about 16 hands, maybe a shade under. But the types were fairly similar, and the horse, the foal, was actually bigger than both parents, but very similar in build. If you were to take two dissimilar horses, you know, you could end up getting something that's unpredictable.
Well, it just occurred to me. I mean, just because there's certain corrections or attempts. Anecdotally, a mare that toes out. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you go out of your way to pair her up to somebody very straight legged to try to?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times you try to make some corrections if you could. A mare that toes out, you might want to breed to a more correct horse. In this case, when I mentioned Abel Tasman's shoulder, you know, she's got a great shoulder on her, and so does American Pharoah. And it's one's the male version, one's the female version, but they're very similar. So in that particular case, I thought it would be a nice element to continue that. And then American Pharoah obviously has that great musculature that she could use, and you know, he could size her down a bit, put some more heft into the rear end. So there's you know, you're working with something where there's some similarities and some areas for physical enhancement. And this is really the beauty of anyone who wants to breed. They get a chance to look at the physical. They get a chance to look at the pedigrees. And it's why when we give, for example, a lot of times at the day job at Orthover Consultant, a guy does a mare analysis for those broodmare compatibility analysis. He'll give us a description of the mare and whatnot, but we'll give 10 stallions so that he has a shot to take a look at each stallion, visit the stallion if he wants to, and find the best physical matches as well. This way he knows that we've given 10 horses that actually are good on pedigree, but now he can go and do the groundwork for the physical match to complement that.
This is part of the exercise, and this is why you go to you go to people like Sid, and you get insight and advice, and you take your brood mares, and Sid will help you formulate a plan, depending on what your goals are. That's a big part of it. Well, anything else from the sale these first 2 days, Sid, that caught your eye? Maybe some of the babies, some of these short yearlings?
Horses are selling really pretty well. It's the same kind of story, Steve, that we've been noting over the last few years. The good horses are really selling well. But if you look, I think the median's kind of down. So it's the same story that the latter part of the marketplace is where you have your weakness, and the top part, there's plenty of money, which is just the general trend in the game anyway.
True. That's true. Interesting to see the some of these early first croppers, Nyquist and Run Happy, among the names here. The American Pharoah babies continue to also excite and fetch top dollar. Frosted had an early pop here, and Exaggerator too. Kind of some bellwethers for what we can look to. Later in the year with the first crops. Speaking of which, we didn't get a chance to do it last week. We launched it. We ended up kind of running off with a couple of fun conversations. But the final stallion results from last year, the first crop and the general sire list, some interesting results, actually, when it was all said and done.
The horse that ended up winning cross traffic, we're talking freshman stallion, Son of Unbridled Song, a surprise at the top for a few reasons. One, he started off fairly inexpensively. He also was a horse that really was a four-year-old, for Todd Pletcher. And the trend has really been for Unbridled Song horses to come on a little later. So it was pretty surprising, because this horse is, a typical type, stretchy, tall, long horse. Yet he got some precocious horses, including the favorite to win the two-year-old championship. So he's a pleasant surprise for them. The fee has gone up to $25,000 in 2019. And, he's a horse that really has the credentials as a sire. And it'll be very interesting to see how he continues, because we've been talking, Steve, about Unbridled Song looking for really his first big son, and we've noted that they've been clustered in the last few books, last few years. We have several others coming up over the next few years, headed by Arrogate. So this horse is struck first, and it's going to be a real interesting few years to observe what happens, because it's quite likely Unbridled Song will get in here, because he's got too many good sons right here at the end. And if this is the one, we're seeing some kind of history as it takes place.
It's amazing that Unbridled Song kind of leaves the scene slightly prematurely, and all of a sudden, these sons pop up. And how does cross traffic success here, how does that help? I'm guessing it helps arrogate somewhat that you know,
oh, yeah,
anybody,
but, yeah.
Right? Doesn't it?
It definitely does, because it gives all the backers, you know, added hope that he was a better racehorse and much more expensive stud fee, therefore much better mares. These are the kind of signs you like. If you're standing a son of a stallion and you see another son hit, it's all a good feeling for you, because, you know, you feel like you've got the better one coming down the line. And there are several, as we pointed out. And in this particular year, aside from Cross Traffic, just a few places down in fifth place was Will Take Charge with his first crop.
Right.
He's shown great form as well. And there's one thing I found observing first crop sire lists. In general, it's always good to be in the top eight, top ten maybe. I find that those horses that are in the top ten, especially if they seem to have the pedigree to carry on, they're the ones you're going to find your future stars in there. Of course, there's always exceptions, and occasionally you'll get a horse that was, you know, well outside the top ten. Come on, I think Ghost Zapper was one of those. Curlin might have been down in the top ten, or maybe even outside of it. I can't remember, but there are exceptions, but in the main, you like to see your horse in that group, because it kind of sets you up as a sign for next year. Of course, you know, there's been some horses that when you get deep into, you know, there's so many of them, and, you know, if you get really deep down there, it's almost tough, because you do need to have some kind of sign early. Will Take Charge, for example, was fifth, but he's shown some really nice horses that have shown potential to develop further. In contrast, the same farm, Three Chimneys, has got to be slightly disappointed in their other horse, Strong Mandate, who have finished in the top 20, but way down in the top 20, I think 18. You know, he, I'm sure they would have expected a little more from him, especially since he was a top two-year-old. So there's always, you know, surprises that way as well. Now, Spencer, which has Cross Traffic, also had the number two horse, Golden Sense. He's a horse that bears watching as well, Steve. The set of Into Mischief started off as a potential classic prospect, but then settled into a career as a, you know, good sprinter miler type, and he just had a very, very good winter in Dubai the other day to start off his three-year-old season. So he's a horse to... He's another very promising horse as well. Number three horse, Cairo Prince, of course, he was the horse that was the big talking horse. He started his career for $10,000 at Airdrie. He's owned by Airdrie and Darley, but he stands at Airdrie. And he hit the ground running with his weanlings and yearlings, which are really exceptional-looking horses, so there was a lot of return on those horses. People were making incredible money because he was such a favorite of the sales rings, both with his weanlings and yearlings and the two-year-olds. And, you know, the promise of that has translated to the track, because he's produced a lot of winners, and he was number three on the list.
Yeah, one thing about that's notable, looking at the successful progeny, and not only did Cairo Prince hit the ground running and get, you know, win early types, here we are at the beginning of the three-year-old year, and right actually even at the tail end of the two-year-old season, John Sheriff's had that Giza Goddess win the Blue Norther, and now Mijos wins the other day for Jack Jerkins. And we talked to Don Little Jr. on Monday. And what that projects to me, Sid, is that, you know, he got horses that were able to win in, you know, July, August, September. Now here it is, you know, a little bit later in the development curve, and there's horses winning December, January, and that's a nice indication that, you know, that they're not just precocious, that the others, as they mature, are getting good.
Yeah. And that was one of the things about him, Steve, was that what drew people to him with his weanlings and yearlings were that they weren't big, muscular, sprinty types that were just men versus boys in the sales ring. They were actually scopier, longer horses that looked like they'd mature early but go on. And so that was the promise of that, and that's what they're looking for. To your other example of Unbridled Song and Cross Traffic vis-a-vis Arrogant, Cairo Prince and Pioneer of the Nile bodes well for American Pharoah, because Cairo Prince is the first son of Pioneer of the Nile now. And, of course, American Pharoah will have his 2-year-olds this year. So again, Coolmore must be thinking, hey, this is nice to see.
Amazing. Fourth on the list, McMahon, here in New York, just miles away on the hill above the lake, and Central Banker, who really came and comes at a good time, the Spitestown Sun for Joe McMahon, and he ends up the fourth, and seems like his horses are gonna mature and get better with age as well.
Yeah, and that's a big component for Spitestown. You know, Spitestown is a horse that took time himself to mature, and by the time he won his top races, he was, you know, 5 or 6. And it's a characteristic he passes on. So that's something to look forward to as well. And there's a, you know, there's a regional horse right there.
Which is really, it's a big accomplishment to land him ahead of some much more heralded names.
Absolutely.
You know, when you look at you know, Verrazano, eighth, and you know, Revolutionary 15th. You mentioned Strong Mandate. You know, the horse that a couple horses. You know, you mentioned Will Take Charge 5th. Noble Mission that has got some strong following, Sid, and people that were excited about Noble Mission's presence in North America. Fed Biz and Bo Lane. Bo Lane likes Fed Biz a lot down the road. He thinks Fed Biz is just going to go, you know, get momentum here going forward.
Yeah, there's like I said, these horses that you know, are within that top 10, and especially if they've got the race record and the looks to project forward, those are the ones that that hold the most promise. Having said that, this is a fickle game, and a lot of it depends on the numbers. And we've mentioned the first crop. Numbers usually drop by the third crop and the fourth crop, so there's some sustainability that's required as well to get them to that point where stallion managers can get people interested in breeding to those horses again. So, like, for example, with Cross Traffic at the Endure, some thin years, and then this year coming up, 2019, at a $25,000 stud fee, he's going to be rewarded. So you know, and the other thing is, sometimes with some well-intentioned horses, and I can name three off the top that are legitimately elite stallions right now: Ghost Zapper, Curlin, and even Quality Road. He's at 150,000. All of those horses started off, in Quality Road's case, had some success off the bat, then went through some colder periods, and his fee had dropped down to 25,000. He's at 150,000 now. Curlin, his fee had dropped down to, I think, 25,000 as well. He's at 175,000. And Ghost Zapper had started off at the just before the economic meltdown at a very high fee of 200,000. Dropped all the way down to 20, and is back up, I think around 85,000 now. If I'm wrong in that case, in that region, just shows you that some of these horses, especially some of these very well intentioned horses, you can't really give up on them too quickly.
Well, I've got to slip in a note, Sid, on this topic, because yesterday David Fox and Joe Bravo joined us. They're fishing in the Gulf. They're in Louisiana, and
I saw your picture.
Well, isn't that great? They later on in the day, Joe Bravo put up the picture of the team that they pulled out a bunch of red snapper, two each, it looked like, and. Yeah. I'm just clearly Joe and David, they're heading out again, and they're listening in. Cairo Prince is out of the Holy Bull Dam, Holy Babette, for the Elams.
Yep.
And David Fox trained Holy Babette, and Joe among the stakes wins that Holy Babette amassed. And she was a nice horse. She made $250,000 with six wins.
Yeah. Wow. Great tie-in.
I love it, and I'm just looking at her record. She graded stake placed was Holy Babette in the Chaposa Springs. Great old Calder stake in the Safely Kept. Actually, she was fifth in the Safely Kept, but she was the Chaposa Springs was a grade three at the time, and she was second in there, and she won the Whimsical at Woodbine, and she won the Dixie Miss at Louisiana Downs. Nice. David, I appreciate that, and let's see what you guys come up with today. see what they can pluck out of the Gulf today, and I love it. Turn our attention, Sid, to the general sire list. Hit a couple of the highlights here. And Kitten's Joy with a big late move in the last quarter to end up on top of the general sire list.
And the second time he's done this in a predominantly dirt racing environment. He was, of course, the leading sire in 2013 as well. He was a sire, I think, freshman sire-wise. I think he was fifth or sixth when he started off. So there's another example of that. But he's an absolutely outstanding stallion. He's turf is his game. It just so happens that when he came around the first time, he was able to really take advantage of both the turf and the all-weather that was so prevalent at the time. This time around, with a slightly different shift in the environment, he was really able to skate on the turf because there's been such a huge proliferation of turf, and all the major tracks have essentially about 45-46% of the most expensive races are on turf, the top 9-10 tracks in the country. And that's where the Kitten's Joys live. So without a wide distribution, but concentrating in that small specific band at the top, he capitalized on turf here And then, of course, internationally, he had the best three-year-old colt in Europe, Roaring Lion. And he had the good older horse out there as well, and several others. It was a great performance for him, and once again for John Sakura, getting a horse just as he did Curlin at the opportune time. He got this horse and was rewarded with another sire championship for him.
It's a great story, and you also have to acknowledge Ken Ramsey's portion in this. Ramsey, you know, doing really a remarkable job, you know, first with the horse, but then, you know, turning him into a successful sire, and then also recognizing that these later stages, this, you know, the last 4, 5, 6 years of his stallion career, needed to be at a place like Hillandale, that they needed a John Sakura to finish the job here at this point.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And, you know, part of that is he realized that even though he was getting so much success on the track, the type of mares, as you pointed out, the cheaper mares he purchased, when he tried to translate that to the sales ring, it didn't work. He wasn't getting the returns he thought he should for a horse of that caliber. Part of that was because of the quality of the mares weren't commercial enough for the buyers that buy pedigree. So he kind of threw his hands up in that, sold half the horse to a partnership that is not just John Sakura, but also Craig Burnick and his family enterprise. Elevage, and so they were able to get the horse there, and John was able to, with his own high-quality Blue Bear Band and his partners, and soliciting mares from some of the best outfits out there, I think what you're going to find with this horse, Steve, is even higher performance over the next few years.
Well, and that, you know, that begs a question that I think maybe once we, this may have come up with along these lines at some point, Sid, over the years, the trade-off of quantity as a method to try to establish the stallion, and this was a unique circumstance where Ramsey was out basically claiming $5,000 and $7,500 mares so that he could amass 150, 175 covers for Kitten's Joy in those early years, betting on, you know, on him elevating those mares. And it worked. I mean, but how do you, that hasn't always worked, because there's been attempts made with I think a Barons, for instance, and the struggle that Jimmy Bond had trying to make Barons a success, and it just never worked. And there's been plenty of people who have, you know, who have gotten you would think enough of a base of covers, and it just happened that the stallion wasn't replicating his own abilities. It's an interesting equation, because you increase your chances. It worked with Kitten's Joy, but that hasn't always worked. I mean, it's up to the stallion, right? If he doesn't hit, it doesn't matter how many you cover.
It gets back to something John Sakura told me about 25 years ago, and that is, really explains it really well. John said, a stallion either flips the light switch on or he doesn't. And in a case with Kitten's Joy, he switched it on, even with the, to use it just for description, the lower quality mare, say, that he got early on. He still switched that light switch on, and he was able to perform. The quality of mares will usually dictate a stallion's success. And so the general thinking is now that with better mares, he should do even more, and he certainly will do more in the sales arena, because before they get to the track, they get to the ring, and that ring is very, very punishing on pedigree and physique, obviously, but the pedigree portion of it is really important, and that's where John's expertise will come in here to increase the black type qualities of his mates, and that should translate to higher auction prices, and it should also translate to better performance on the racetrack. There are certain occasions I've seen in the past, you know, not that many, but some cases where a stallion actually did better with lesser mares, and sometimes the mares were too rich for that stallion, or from a different gene pool, and perhaps that the expected return wasn't as big as you'd imagine. Sharp Enough comes to mind that way. He was a stallion that started off very inexpensively in Europe, got tremendous horses from, you know, not many mares, then finally came to Gainesway, where he was bred to much, much better mares and did well, but didn't have that as big a jump as you would have expected. However, in general, the rule is the better the quality of mares the stallion gets, the more successful he's going to be, because, you know, you're stacking the best possible mates in a book, and that's usually the case for success.
Beyond Kitten's Joy, Candy Ride, who had the strength of Gunrunner's crazy earnings from the Pegasus as a jump start, and it looked like he would go wire to wire, but that didn't happen. The unfortunate Scat Daddy ended up third. Into Mischief was fourth, led by Audible's earnings, and Tappet with another outstanding year ends up fifth. Unique Bella was his biggest earner, and his progeny fetched $12,800,000 on the racetrack. Then Curlin, Quality Road, More Than Ready, Looking at Lucky, and Flatter, the dependable, mm-hmm. Looking at Lucky for $20,000 continues to click along and accelerate, obviously, the engine on his train this year.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, all your big guys are, you know, within the top 15, 20. There's some real value horses in there as well. Accelerate, looking at Lucky, who you mentioned at $20,000. Further down the list, English Channel, who's had a bump up to $30,000, especially with turf now being more prevalent. He's a horse that's found a scene. If you go back up to Candy Ride, though, you know, this is another terrific stallion. Incidentally, a horse that started off at John Secura's and then ended up going to Lane's End. So while John got Curlin from Lane's End, he lost Candy Ride to Lane's End. Candy Ride started, as you pointed out, with Gunrunner, but he ended up with Game Winner, champion two-year-old.
That's right. That's right.
You know, he's a exceptional stallion. Does extremely well with some of the prevalent bloodlines that are out there, notably Stormcat and AP Indy. A lot of times, when you have a lot of mares in the pool by certain stallions, and a stallion clicks with them, you can almost guess what's going to happen. And with Candy Ride showing early affinity with Stormcat and AP Indy, and that's continued to just help him along. Argentine bred horse by Ride the Rails. The clearing flying horse, kind of obscure sire, but exceptional racehorse, and with the aid of the Stormcat line, he got Gunrunner, who is who's out of a Giant's Causeway mare, and with the aid of AP Indy himself, he got game winner, who was a horse actually that we had shortlisted for one of our clients, the Wests. And Ben Glass was able to get this colt for only $110,000. Mm-hmm. So that was a heck of a bargain. Step Daddy, of course, is a horse that died early, and Justify is his big name. But Coolmore has to be heartened with what they got there, because their Scat Daddy, some no-name never in Europe, led the first-year list there, took a huge jump up to 100,000, I guess, euros in Ireland. You know, that bodes well for the Scat Daddy. Into Mischief is in fourth at Spencerfield, you know, considered one of the top sires in the country today. He's at $150,000. Caput, Curlin, yeah, they're, I mean, all the major guys are here.
I'll throw in what you mentioned, English Channel, down in the teens, and I'll throw in another plug for our segment sponsor, Hill and Dale, Midnight Loot, who I always bring up with John whenever John Secura joins us. Midnight Loot, $15,000. And he ends up 20th. It's unbelievable. And you know, and it's not just value for performance on the track if you go to him to get a runner. He's also trading at 4 or 5 times in the ring, whether it's his yearlings or his 2-year-olds, you end up making money on the sales side as well. So Midnight Loot just continues to plug along. He's now, 16 years old this year, and you just cannot go wrong at $15,000.
Yeah, that's a great deal.
Led by Midnight Bisou, her $1.5 million in earnings. Blame is on the come, too, isn't he? Blame.
He really is. Mm-hmm.
Right? He's hit his stride.
He's another horse that, you know, took a dip. Well-intentioned horse that had stood in 2018 for 12.5 and just had a breakout year. And he's back at 30, he's fully booked.
I'm just looking. There is one thing about this that you look up and down. There's Curlin at 6, and there's Street Sense at 16, and there's Hardspun at 22. So in this era, that crop will just have the lasting. I always talk historically about the class of 57 with Roundtable and Bold Ruler and Gallant Man, and you know, that's considered Barbizon and Clem and so forth, the General Duke. But this trio that provided us with an incredible Triple Crown season and rags to riches. It's sort of like a super group. And she's the Stevie Nicks of the Fleetwood Mac of this of these guys.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I love it. Sid, before we go today, I got to also we speculated on the Eclipse finalists. Now we got them. Any further thoughts about what we had discussed and the way things shook out?
You know, I think they, the voters in general, did a pretty good job. I was, when you and I were talking, we didn't have the finalists, obviously, but it was nice to see Mike Abrams in the finalists for Breeder of the Year. Of course, he's a breeder of Accelerate. It didn't look like he was going to get in there. It was also good to see Windstar get some recognition there, because there's been a lot of anti-general Justify sentiment on social media. Sometimes you get, you know, and the view is a little distorted in social media. John had a lot that didn't translate to the general voting populace, who kind of voted against that grain of sentiment. So that was good to see. And, you know, I think ultimately, Steve, the biggest question that I'm interested in seeing is what will end up happening with Horse of the Year. You know, I wrote a piece in the TDN pretty much, you know, laying out the case that, you know, the importance of the Triple Crown. But it'll be interesting to see what some of these voters think in a new era where perhaps the Triple Crown isn't as important. The vote will let us know.
Yeah, and it's funny that, you know, I kind of was hoping or expecting to see maybe Jane Lyon would get a nod on the breeder side, and you know, I advocate every year for Fred Hertrick and John Fielding. I mean, I don't know how much more guys are supposed to do, right?
The biggest surprise I did have, and I'm going to say this, and I want to embarrass you, but what John Ferrata said, I'm astonished that the Steve Bick Show is not just any type of nod.
Well, thank you, Sid. I appreciate it. You know, it's one of the. It's an odd.
Yeah, I mean,
It's different. You know, especially after last year. It's a weird dynamic. What this is, you know, 750 hours a year. I'm supposed to. I don't know how you distill that into a 1 hour edited segment. I mean, we submitted this year. This year we put in the tribute show to Jack Van Berg. I mean, year to year. I don't know what else. What are you supposed to do? I mean, last year the Garrett Gomez tribute show, and that got an honorable mention. I don't know. People enjoy the information, and they enjoy the cashing on horses they hear about and learning more about the game, and that's enough reward, frankly. I appreciate the sentiment. Well, we'll two more days of the sale, and that season is underway. We got another mixed sale in February at Phasic, and then focus turns toward this year's 2-year-old in training sale, and we'll be watching for what emerges out of that. And Sid, we'll convene next week. You can work with Sid and Work Thoroughbred Consultants, WERK, of course, and 510-490-1111. And is there still time for people to get their sire if they haven't put their sire in for the mare match? Are they all registered up, Sid?
Yeah, we got most the stallions are, but if you've got a stallion and you haven't enrolled in Enix, I would recommend that you do. But thanks for the plug, Steve. I appreciate it.
Not at all. You get your lion score and on the broodmare compatibility analysis, and for those that are wanting to see what kind of foal your mares are producing, you take a look and then get with Sid and make decisions for this year. We've got another 4 or 5 weeks before the Stallion Barns open, and we'll start to cover mares, and everybody excited because fuzzy foal photo season is underway. And there's no happier time on Twitter than fuzzy foal season.
That's right.
Everybody loves pictures of those, and people love the videos of foals wobbling and falling down, and it's amazing how entertaining it is. No matter how many times, and in fact, Brian Bouye from the from the museum, from the Hall of Fame. We're going to have Brian in the next couple of days. We tried to do it before the end of the year. But the full patrol, the video cameras mounted in barns, in the folding barns around the country, and in the stalls of prominent mayors, you'll be able to track the full patrol again this year. And that was a huge hit. People were like crazy for it. And it was almost as successful as that giraffe that took forever to deliver her to deliver her baby giraffe. That was the most popular full patrol of 2018, but the thoroughbred full patrol was second. Sid, I appreciate it. We'll talk next
week. No problem. I'll see you next week, Steve. Thanks.
You got it. Sid Fernando, everybody. And you follow Sid at Sid Fernando. And also Sire Watch, which gets all the pedigree notes and information out. We'll take a break and going to come back. You're going to hear that conversation from a year ago, basically, 11 months ago, John Rowe. And I think you'll be moved, and you'll appreciate the challenge that he faced. John lost his battle with liver cancer over the weekend. John Rowe from last year with us. And then we'll check with Seth as well back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Yeah, ExpressBet. Give me 12 grand to win on the 9 at Gulfstream. Yeah, that's what I said. 12 grand. 12,000 smackaroos. 12,000...
Mikey! Hang up the phone! You crazy? You can't bet that much.
Quiet, Joey. I'm practicing.
Practicing? Practicing for what? Divorce?
No, I'm practicing my Pegasus Big Bet with my friends at ExpressBet.
Ooh, the contest is back?
And better than ever. All you gotta do is register for free at ExpressBet.com. Then you'll earn entries for every bet you make until January 14th. The more you play, the more chances you have to win.
And you win a $12,000 bet on the Pegasus?
And a VIP trip to Gulfstream with airfare, hotel, tickets, it's all included. Now, if you'll excuse me, I got some more practicing to do.
Yeah.
So, ExpressBet, you still there? Good. Like I was saying,
ExpressBet is the official online wagering partner of the Pegasus World Cup. Visit ExpressBet.com to bet today. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel, and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money.
Races.
Your love gives
about 50.